So as we begin this Dharma talk, I want to invite people behind the radiator, if you'd like to move your cushion into the aisle or in front of the altar, you're welcome to. And invite us all to stay in our practice through this Dharma talk. And indeed, the invitation is to stay in your practice for the rest of your life. This practice of breathing in and breathing out in Zen were quite simple. Not a lot to this path of Zen. Pretty much we only say one thing and tell you only to pay attention. One teacher was once asked by a student, what is the secret teaching of Zen? And he wrote on the earth with a stick the character for attention. And the student said, well, yeah, I know that, but beyond that, what is the true teaching of Zen? And again, with his stick on the earth, he wrote, attention, attention. And the student, who was quite stubborn and slightly dim and dull, like most of us, asked one more time, but what's the trick? What's the secret of the secret? And the teacher with his stick on the earth wrote, attention, attention, attention. This is the gift of this retreat, this opportunity to pay attention. All of us here being held in this container. All of us finding food that magically appears in the kitchen. The bell rings and we line up and we go into the kitchen and the delicious soup, with onions or without, appears. The dressings, the salads, and we come back and we eat together. And then we line up again and take our dishes into the kitchen, and magically they clean themselves. Magically, of course, is the effort of Sangha. Our astonishing Tenzo, who, of course, this retreat starts long before the retreat starts, and this behavior, this Zen behavior of bowing and saying yes, began when Jenny got the email, and the email was, would you be Tenzo? Jenny's response was, yes. I don't know how, but yes. Isn't it like this, though? We have to say yes before we know how. If you wait until you know how to do it, you've lost your life. So we say yes again and again and again. Say yes to doing this practice that we cannot know how to do. We don't know how we live, and yet we live in this universal life. We are none other than this universal life living itself. And in our sutra service, we read the lovely passage from Kosho Uchiyama, who was a 20th century Japanese Soto master, and one of the first Japanese teachers who was willing to accept Westerners into his temple. He had quite a small temple and was willing to put up with people who knew nothing, didn't know the rules at all. But he, his Zendo was a place where Westerners practiced, I think in the 50s. And this passage we've entitled, "Your True Self is the World." Usually we set up a world in opposition to ourself and then go about trying to pocket as much wealth, power, or happiness from that world as we can. Yet when our way of life accords with the Buddha Dharma, we no longer construct a world in opposition to what we think of as ourself. When you accord with Buddha Dharma, your true self is the entire world, and in this world there is no possibility of exchange. The life of the true self is not apart from our functioning. Everything we encounter is our life. So we are studying human life. We are studying what it means to be a human being. This is what the Buddha studied. His first impulse, like ours, was to find a way to transcend, to find the right technique, to transcend this this bitter world where sickness, old age, and death are unavoidable. And he apparently was an amazing student and learned many esoteric techniques and was able to achieve astonishing states of mind. But he found that whatever state of mind he accomplished, at some point it would change. And then he would be thrown back into this world. And it's said that he abandoned these many offers to be a leader, to be a great teacher for these specific techniques, and decided to see what he could find out for himself. And that he had some memory of being a young child and being under the shade of a tree, a picnic. And he remembered some sense of ease and naturalness. We might even say this was one of his awakenings. He was relying on this memory, not trying to recreate it, but perhaps knowing for himself from these this moment of ease, of a moment when there was no problem, when the breeze was not separate from the trees or from the self, when perhaps the eyes looked out and saw this world as the true self. These moments that we have all experienced, big and small, but moments of grace, moments when there's a gap between the cars of the train going by, and we peer through. for a moment, we see the sunrise, or we look out and we see the wind blowing the branches of the trees, or we hear some piece of music that for some reason we can't explain touches our heart and we cry. We read a poem, we see a painting, we have a talk with a friend. It doesn't matter, but walking down the street seeing a crushed beer can, just as good as any other moment. But there are moments when the light breaks through, not because you have worked so hard, not because of your great effort, but because this is the truth of the world. This bright and shining light that no matter what is always present, the bright and shining light and life of the body. The other day we read the lovely Norman Fisher piece that talked about the beauty of the body. It breathes, it circulates blood, it heals, it keeps us balanced and alive without our paying attention to it. You do not live by your own effort. Occupied as we are with other matters, we constantly forget our life is a sacred miracle. So this sacred miracle that has sustained us from the moment of our first breath, when we were utterly helpless and useless, when we were protected by the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that have ensured our survival when we literally did not know which end was up, flailing about, someone put food in our mouth, someone protected us from the cold. Someone looked after us in ways we had no idea. The infant, the little child, doesn't know that she is a little child. She knows she is the center of the universe. And things just come to her, just come to him. And so it is throughout our life, but we get so carried away with doing and accomplishing, and it is important to come into the fullness of being a human being, to learn to take care of ourself. And this taking care of ourself, of course, is a lifelong learning. So we learn to do that, but taking care of ourselves is more like cooperating with the natural aliveness of life. Doctors don't heal anyone. They allow healing to happen. If the body does not heal itself, there is no life. And so Uchiyama saying that the life of the true self is not apart from our functioning. So this true self, we might wonder what this is. Sometimes we can talk of a little self and big self and our many selves. And earlier in this retreat, we looked into the some of the last instructions of the Buddha, be a light unto yourself. Also translated, your true self is the light. But it's easy to make this true self into something other than this. just in creating this name, True Self, we wonder where it is. We once had a Tenzo who was given a shopping list and the many things, three cans of garbanzo beans and 4 pounds of rice, and one True Self was on his shopping list. He, of course, suspected it was a new kind of margarine and came back very dutifully and said, "I've got everything on the list, but I cannot find the True Self." Many of us have chuckled for years. But we all hope it's on the shelf somewhere. And if we just look hard enough, maybe it's in the other aisle. Maybe it's some other technique. If I try Lojong practice, maybe that will save me. If I try this practice or that practice. No, there is no hope for any of us. There is nowhere you will find this. And yet not one of your steps leads away from it. This True Self is none other than the functioning of this moment. This functioning, this universal functioning, in another book. In fact, actually the one that this quote is from, it's called From the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment. And it's Uchiyama's comment on Dogen's wonderful instructions to the cook. And Uchiyama says, "The function of the Tenzo expressing the Buddha Dharma in terms of living out the vivid and dynamic quality of her life lives as a total self in whatever circumstances might arise. As long as this self is identical with its world, when we function in the role of Tenzo, this functioning becomes the life of the self. This vivid and dynamic quality of life, the total self. We are all living our total self, whatever circumstances arise. From the relative mind, it's so clear that there is delusion and awakening. It is so clear that there are two basic categories in the world. There is me and there is the rest of the world. This is inherent in our perception. This is the very delusion that we seek to examine, to begin to realize that we are participating, we are fish swimming in the water, and the water is the fish, and the fish is the water. Without water, there is no such thing as fish. And we are all participating, active participants, sometimes willing, sometimes not willing participants. But whatever your opinion of yourself or the moment, this great functioning of life cares not one whit. We say life is a great round mirror. That generously reflects whatever comes in front of it. So when great love appears in the mirror reflects great love. Love appears in your heart, the mirror reflects love. When tiredness appears, the mirror reflects tiredness. Anger, joy, pain. There is a reflective quality of self and the world because the world is the self. Uchiyama said, everything we encounter is our life. Your true self is this entire world. One of the root koans we have in our tradition, and as Melissa explained the other day, essentially there are two koans, although we have many koans and quite an elaborate koan curriculum here, the Boundless Way school. But in Zen, all koans are some version of who am I? And what is it? So the who am I is looking into this matter of the self. Dogen says to study the way is to study the self. We are studying the self arising moment after moment. And with this question of who am I, the encouragement is not to create a philosophical treatise, but to move close to our own experience. And this is attention, to move closer to our experience. Sometimes we say to close the gap between self and self. So easy to be separated, to step outside ourself and to keep track. How was I? How am I? How will I be? As if we could step outside of this world to see. We cannot. We also read from Okamura, Shohaku Okamura, who was one of the principal Dharma heirs of Uchiyama. Shohaku Okamura still, I think he lives in Indiana now. For a while he had a small zendo in western Massachusetts. But he is in this same school, and he says there's no way to step outside of. We cannot be an observer of absolute reality because we ourselves are part of its total movement. How wonderful. We're all here trying so hard, and I have such appreciation for each of us showing up to this and more than showing up, staying through this. This vow to stay, to sit upright in the downtown of suffering, to sit upright in the downtown of joy, whatever landscape you are traversing, to me it is an act of great courage and great love to do nothing. Such a challenge and such an astonishing thing to do. We are all so lucky that our karma, that our life has led us here. Such an opportunity to see for ourself. And so in this who am I, we look into this notion. We say, I am breathing. And so the instruction is to ask the question, who is the one who is breathing? And to enter this question, we have to get very close to the breath, to investigate for ourselves. This is a path of finding out for yourself, not a path of learning more or doing techniques, but of investigating. Investigating life and investigating death, because there is no life without death. Should not be two words, but life and death. And so who am I? Who is the one who is breathing? Who is the one who is in pain? Who is walking? And so we look into this I, this self. And the what is it is looking into what appears. So as we settle into our practice, as we slow down a little bit, as we maybe touch some kind of slightly quieter state or whatever is here, something appears, and it may be the jumbled thoughts in our mind. It may be the pain in our belly. It may be the sound of the traffic or the cool breeze on your face. And we ask the question, we investigate, what is this sensation? What is the arising of this thought? What is it? Not so much what is the content, but we look at the subject, the arising. And the teaching is either of these koans lead us into the heart of the source world, into the belly of life. And when we crawl in there, determinedly heading forward, we can begin to see for ourselves that there is something else going on, something that cannot be described, something that the self and the world locked in embrace. The self and the world are not different. And this is what Dogen said when he quoted the other reading. And of course, Uchiyama was a great student of Dogen, as all of the Japanese Soto tradition is, and Okamura. But Dogen said, an ancient Buddha said, the entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe is the gate of liberation. The entire universe is the eye of Vairochana. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. So as we encounter our life and the fullness of life, your whole life is here. You may think that you have left your partner and your children or your parents or your boss. You may think you have left them somewhere else, but they have all come with you. You may have noticed them causing trouble from time to time. But your whole world is here. When one human being sits, the whole universe sits. And Uchiyama and Okamura and Dogen and all of the Zen teachers are encouraging us to sit with this universal life, to know there is not a hair's breadth difference between your life and the life of all worlds. There is nowhere else to go. We can abide right here. And as we do this, we are met and held and begin to realize our true place after all these years and after all this work. Just this. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and you can turn this way if you'd like. we'll now have our Dharma dialogue, which is the opportunity to ask questions about this talk or about your experience of Zen, or make comments, questions, whatever. Tenzo.
Thanks for the shout-out. A couple of years ago, I saw this really amazing 8-inch caterpillar that looked kind of like the one from the Alice in Wonderland drawings. And I got to watch it over a couple of weeks as it grew. And it made me, I looked up what kind it was, and it made me think that a caterpillar moth is kind of a creature that the body extends in time, and the caterpillar is the mouth and stomach part of the body, and the moth is the reproductive system part of the body. And when Ray was taking me out to get groceries, I was thinking about this creature we make here, and what is the Tenzo and the Tenzo team and the grocery acquisition team.
Yeah.
Part of the digestive system.
Yeah.
but just seeing it that way, kind of like the slime mold of like that.
Well, and this is our together practice. Right, we can't all do things, so we serve each other in our cleaning and in the cooking and in the digestive tract and all these different things. Although each one of us must consume and release for ourselves this delicious food, but thank you.
But also as one creature.
Yes, mm-hmm. One creature.
One creature.
Wonderful. Yeah. Yes. Diane.
I don't have words, but this.
Yeah. Well said.
Thank you so much for that. So much of that talk resonates with me. And it's hard to take just one thing to talk about, but it reminded me of a quote I've heard that is, you are an aperture through which the universe is viewing itself. Mm-hmm. And I've kept that with me since hearing it years ago, and that just made that arise for me, that particular saying, and I feel that way often when I'm in nature, you know, hiking mountains or running through the forest or something like that. I feel like there's no separation in those moments. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful thing. So thank you for that talk. It kind of brought me back to that place that I've experienced multiple times, and it's always a wondrous thing. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Carolyn, in the back.
So it reminded me of lots of things too. The first part brought back some things that have been happening over the last couple of days that seemed so different and important that things were slowing down, and I could actually see my mind generating these things and then having some space and watching it generated. And I'm thinking, oh, great, now I'm going to take home and talk about myself. But actually, I think the more important experience happened this morning when I was cleaning the bathroom. I became aware that I have a very pervasive tendency to do things really fast and efficiently. And I think it's not a lifelong thing. I think I probably started developing it when I was working and had young children and had to do as much as I could and more than I possibly could, but to do everything as efficiently and sort of cut little corners, but ones that I thought were not important. And I discovered myself doing that this morning with the bathrooms and was the point. That was the first thing that came to me. But more of the point was I'm saying, what is the point of getting it done? Pastor, this is my bathroom, my temple, my family, my, you know, what am I cutting corners for? You know, what's supposed to be more important than this? So I just went back to minutely getting every little piece out around the sink and feeling better, like I was not being as efficient, but I was doing something that seemed more important.
But I just have to say a couple of things about this. It's so touched by your making these connections, right? That this is, the insights really do arise. But the fact that it came from cleaning the bathroom, a couple of us up at the front were, yeah. Right, that's one of the great gifts of Zen practice. It's not just about sitting on the cushion. It's our whole life. I mean, that's what David was pointing us to this morning. Everything is it. And I actually, when I walked into the bathroom recently, I just thought, whoa, what happened in here? It was so, I don't know, there was like a resonating feeling of someone really cared for this. And so there's this ripple effect. You know, we're talking about the gifts of the Tenzo. Every single person in here, when we come to this kind of recognition that there's no reason to do any of this, and then we give it our whole heart, it ripples all around. It's such a great thing. And I'm also reminded of a quote, I'm paraphrasing him, from Rumi, the 13th century Persian poet, who said something like, why are we all in such a hurry? We're all going to end up going through exactly the same door at the end. It's like I always think of that and think, oh, right, this.
Brad.
One of the things that we read in the one of the pieces was that it's all light. This universal body is all light. And a couple days ago, we were saying it was all darkness. And I wondered if you were talking about that.
Well, would you say a few words about your experience with this?
I'm confused.
Yeah, me too. Right? And I think this confusion is essential. How could it be? There is no way it can be the way it is. Because it is only dark. You know, when darkness is here, there is a darkness that's not the opposite of light. It's not like, okay, I'm going to just hunker down. I'm going to get through this so I get to something else. When it's dark, it's dark. And we are encouraged to die. To not hold on. To dive in. And it is only light. How could there be anything but the light? And we know this, and when it's only light, we're encouraged to die. Right? Die in joyous confusion. I can never figure it out. We can't figure out how the trees go. When we put stuff in the garden and it grows. How? And then it dies. And how? We don't know.
There's a wonderful koan, and I can't quite remember the wording. You might be able to remember it, Fran, where the great teacher Yun Men is asked something, you know, what? And he says, everyone has their own light. And then the next line is, the darkness is dark.
But you can't see the light.
But you can't see the light, right? The darkness is dark. And then somebody says to him, what? You know, that happens at home. It's not just us. It happens to Chinese people from 1,000 years ago.
What?
and he says it's the hallway, it's the floor right
the storeroom and the gate.
The storeroom and the gate. The storeroom and the gate, right? And this is so resonant for me around your question for some reasons that I won't say. But I also think about all the teachings, you know, what David just said, and in some of our sutras, you know, about darkness and light, and there are two footsteps, you know, we go into right,
the foot before the foot behind
in walking.
Right.
And there really is this, the mind cannot comprehend this, right? The mind just goes, wait a minute, what? And then the only way is, you know, cleaning the bathroom, cooking the rice, giving out job assignments. Like, that's what we're here for. I also was thinking, we had a little bit of an issue some period of time ago, seems like years ago, during the sesshin, where somebody was fiddling with the thermostat, and this building is very delicate. And I had said to Janine, let's make a little note. I don't think we ever did, but I actually thought about the note we should put over it. It's from another koan, where's the place where there's no heat and cold. And the teacher says, when it's cold, let the cold kill you. And when it's hot, let the heat kill you. But I thought better of putting that sign over.
don't touch the thermostat, and
this life, you know, it brings us to great. Yesterday I was just my life just felt like a shit show. Why do we do this? Well, this is stupid. My whole body hurts. I hate it. Ugh, all these people, when are they going to leave? And then today it's like, oh, all these people, and wow, you know, and I just stuff's gone on, and I'm just like, whoa, look, now I can breathe through this nostril, and now I'm having wonderful feelings in the bathroom. It's just gone, you know, on and on and on. Has anything changed? Not really. But sometimes it's light and sometimes it's dark. And fully, yesterday I was fully in the dark. And today I'm in the light. And tomorrow or even in the next moment, who knows? But the practice remains the same. And that being killed by the heat and cold, it's not literally, you know, freeze to death. But it is the...
Fully experiencing.
Fully experiencing it. And in Dogen's way, to study this, the way to study the self... To study the self is to forget the self. There's some way to practice with who am I, and to practice with what is it are the same, right? That all these koans are pointing to this, how we're so fooled by the idea of being a separate self. It's just it's convenient for a while, but ultimately we have to die to every moment.
So I find myself being moved to say that, so there's also a third view, right, besides that it's all light, and it is all light, right, nothing but light, and that it's only dark, right, and there's only this one thing. So Dogen says that there's no essence that's separate from what's actually manifesting as the universe itself, right? So there's this ever-shifting pattern of light and dark, right? And if we're looking for something outside of that, it's going to be very difficult to find because the vast inconceivable source manifests itself only in the form of this universe that is our true Dharma body. Right? And if we try and look past what's actually here into some other place of only light or some other place of only dark, then we miss the actual manifestation of the source itself right here in our world, in our hearts, and our activity, right? Nothing other than the functioning of ourself, as David pointed out in his talk. Don't look beyond this functioning. Intimately observe, Dogen says. Intimately observe.
So let's intimately observe once more. So coming back into your